Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
There she goes with nothing but the truth. This is a podcast. It's Pop Talk and Aliens. I'm William Clear. And 1 year in, we've been doing this podcast for a year. Started last December with an Elton John show. And this show was actually going to be an Elton John show until I remembered that 2017 is actually the 50th anniversary of Elton John and Bernie Taupin writing songs together. So I figured, wait a few months and do it then and really do the show up. You know, a lot of timpanis and trumpets for those guys because they deserve it. I love them so much. And I'll tell you the whole story of how they met, how they started writing. Elton John basically became an overnight success after some years of struggle in England. It's a great story. I'll take you all through it. But let's wait so that we can congratulate them on their fine work over 50 fucking years. But today, I am going to tell you an alien story. And I'm going to tell you an alien story that you may not have heard of. Even casual people that don't even really follow aliens, you know about Area 51. They've souped it up for movies like Independence Day. You know about Roswell. There's been a million movies about that, shows. Phoenix Lights we did, which is a little more unknown. And Rendlesham Forest in England, which even more so unknown. And you can check those out by looking through the podcast archive if you're listening on iTunes. And if you're not, go to YouTube, Pop Talk and Aliens. Just search that and you will find such episodes. This one, though, it's a little bit more out there and quite entertaining. And, you know, you don't have to know anything about UFOs or care or be any sort of specialist. I'm going to take you through the story, you know, 101 style. We're just going to tell you from the beginning to the end. You don't have to know anything, but you will know a lot when it's over. Let me preface again by saying that I don't necessarily ever believe that any of these stories are true or untrue. A lot of explanations always come out after every single UFO occurrence, a government explanation or a public explanation that, you know, closes the book on the whole thing. And they never really put forth a compelling argument. The argument may be more compelling than the UFO argument, but it's never something that I really buy. Or it's something in the case of like Phoenix Lights, Rendlesham Forest, where it kind of just, they kind of just shuffle it under the rug and be like, dude, just stop fucking asking about that, all right? And those are the very suspicious ones. This one really has neither, because there isn't, it's so outlandish that no one has ever really put an explanation out there. Again, it's so outlandish that really it's there's this one side. It's this UFO side. It's a lot of people who claim to be involved. It's been around for several years, and again, it's entertaining as fuck. So I hope you enjoyed this one. I'll spoil it in the beginning just so that you know what you're getting into. Alien human war inside of an underground military base in Dulce, New Mexico. Underground, humans versus aliens, firing off firearms, number of people dead in the deep, disgusting underbelly of this supposed underground alien base. Now, before we get to the nitty-gritty of it, a lot of times if I've told this story before to people just in casual settings, and as soon as I get to the underground base part, their reaction is usually, underground base, get the fuck out of here. It's a reasonable sticking point. It's a reasonable thing to answer with complete skepticism and just, you know, forget about the rest of the story and not pay attention to it, because already in the beginning, in the premise, you have to introduce this crazy idea. So in order to establish at least some believability to this, an ability to just at least entertain the thought, I would like to tell you that underground bases in the U.S. exist. Very obvious ones that nobody questions because they're there. Probably the most prominent being the NORAD Cheyenne Mountain Complex in Colorado. I think, right? It's Colorado. Underground base. Fucking James Bond style. You know, they run all kinds of war games there, you know, from the movie War Games. They went there. All kinds of shit like that, tracking, you know, nuclear activity all over the world. It's a big deal, and it's underground, technically. I mean, it's inside of a fucking mountain. They carved a mountain out to put a military base. Another lesser-known story, White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Under a hotel called the Greenbrier, there is a huge underground, it's not a base, but it's a bunker that they dug out underground underneath this hotel, hiding in plain sight. And the purpose of this was to for the whole continuity of government thing. If there was ever a nuclear strike, then, you know, all of the bigwigs could go hide in this bunker, and they had, like, you know, a couple months worth of supplies and food, and they could just chill out there until the radioactive fallout dissipated. Which, by the way, 2 months would have been nowhere near enough time. If they ran out of their food and shit in 2 months and they went back up to the surface, they would be skeletons within days. So, you know, thankfully they never had to use that solution. It was President Eisenhower, actually, that put that plan in motion. The late 50s. It was actually codenamed Project Greek Island. And, you know, again, buried in plain sight under this hotel, people visited this hotel and stayed at this hotel for years, and they never noticed that there were TV repairmen constantly around doing, you know, quote-unquote repairs. This underground bunker has been opened up to certain people so that they can actually see it, and there's film footage of it, there's pictures, so the whole thing is true. It's there. It's an underground facility. So let's get past that part. Can underground facilities be built by the U.S. government? Yes. And they have. There's others, but I think those two examples will get you through the night. So, let's talk about the big one, Dulce, New Mexico. Now, we all know about Area 51. It's America's most secret complex, right? They didn't acknowledge that it even existed for like 50 years, even though everyone knew it existed. There were pictures, there were stories, photographic evidence. There was no doubt, but they didn't admit that it was there. They did not admit that it was there. It takes presidential clearance to work there. The workers are ferried in to Area 51 via unmarked airplanes. I've actually seen one. I was there once. Supposedly, those people have nothing to do with work on supposed flying saucers. Those people go at a different time, and they go to a different part called S4. So I covered that in my Area 51 podcast. Go check that out if you like. But unfortunately, as some people believe, Area 51 and the similar setup near Dulce, New Mexico. Is it Dulce? It's Dulce. May now belong to forces not loyal to the U.S. government or even the human race. And all these scientists, according to certain people, are actually working specifically for these aliens that are running the show behind the scenes. All right, very far-fetched. Very far-fetched. I grant you that. Stay with me. All right? Let's put that aside. I'm just saying that some people think that. Let's put that aside and then just focus on Dulce, New Mexico. This place is located right on the border of Colorado and New Mexico. It's a little town. There's like 3,000 people there. And it's also the tribal headquarters of an Apache tribe. So, you know, again, we know governments can build secret bases. We've proven that. And I think we can certainly prove that government is not shy about building some shit on an Indian reservation. So far, so good. Tourists have passed through this area. I mean, it's not a tourist attraction, but they've gone through the little towns, and some claim that when they go to this town, they see black vehicles, heavily tinted windows that tailgate them until they are finally outside of the city limits. Now, I can tell you from personal experience that when I went to Area 51, I had the fuck tailgated out of me by a white unmarked truck. It was terrifying. You know, if there's a base here, quite likely that you would see some nefarious cars tailgating you till you got the fuck out of Dodge. Now, in this base, there are supposedly many, many levels underground. And each one of them hosts heinous experiments on humans and animals and aliens. Now, I think it goes down seven levels. Levels six and seven are apparently a nightmarish hell of the worst horrific secrets, experiments, you know, and God knows what other fucking crimes against nature that are going on down here. In level six, there are supposedly, now this is according to people that claim to have worked there. Obviously, a lot of UFO nuts have peppered in information in here, so it's hard to sift through what is just completely made up bullshit from some guy who had nothing to do with it, or some story that someone who actually worked there is telling. But the general idea that there are, in level six, multi-armed, multi-legged humans that are the result of hybrid experiments between humans and aliens. The genetic alteration activities that are, you know, being carried out all over the base, but apparently the worse they get, the lower they are in the different levels of this seven-level nightmare. Level seven has apparently rows after rows of thousands of humans and human mixtures, remains stored in freeze boxes. Completely unknown who these people were. How did they get there? How were they captured? They were mutilated. This hell level also has humanoid-like embryos that are different stages of development, and they're stored in these fucking cages and vats. And then there are humans down here that are found in drugged states, dazed, walking around dazed while they're captive in these large cages. And the officials for this base say that they're insane people, and they're just subjected to drug tests to see if they can cure them. But so to go down the levels a little more, level four, apparently they test the energy fields of humans and that kind of experiment. On five, they do astral projection, spirit body voyaging, and things like that. Number six is psi studies, like the old CIA stuff, you know, I guess experimenting with hallucinogenics and seeing if people have, you know, Jedi mind powers, or if they're like 11 from Stranger Things. And then we know what goes on six and seven. Just horrific experiments, mutilated bodies, alien people, hybrid people walking around with six legs, all that shit. So let's get into our first human being that has spoken about this. The dude's name is Thomas Costello. Apparently he was a security technician for this base. His claim was that these hell levels at the bottom were operated not only by humans, but by living reptilian aliens and their workers, the commonly encountered greys. So apparently, the low levels of this base, you've got like the dregs of the galaxy. You know, the alien trash of the galaxy. I may be galactic war criminals or whatever got them into this, into these lower bases, that like they're fucking slaves. These greys that we all know and love, or I love, gray aliens, slave working, making embryos and fucking twisted human hybrids. Primarily, what they say is that they do these experiments on children. So, fuck those grays. The goddamn criminals of the galaxy that they got, you know, put down to the seventh level. And they're experimenting on kids. It's disgusting. Some say there was a comment on a message board once when I was researching this story. I found a comment from someone who was not upset about the treatment of the human beings here, but rather the treatment of the aliens. Then so their comment said on some UFO website, some crazy ass website. Comment says, goes to show how pathetic and ugly the government and scientists choose to keep this covered up. Not just Dulce, goes with all of the maximum security layers housing thousands of different alien species. It's sick, disgusting, foul, and discriminating how people of this planet can be so evil. Let them go back to where they came from. Not humane or even healthy for any kind of living creature to live in such horrible and unsanitary conditions. This is like the fucking Gray's Lives Matter person that complaining about, you know, there's human beings getting mutilated and experimented on and turned into aliens, and you know they've got five legs and stuff, and this person is complaining about the treatment of the aliens that are living there. So back to Thomas Costello. So he was a security technician here, so he had some access to some of the lower levels of this hellhole. And to what he said, you know, everything that he asked was a need to know basis. And if you were caught divulging any information or even asking for additional information that you weren't already privy to, you were subject to threats of, you know, permanent incarceration or death. I like speculating, complete speculation. I like to think that the threats included going down to the 6th and 7th levels, because I would be much more afraid of that than death or incarceration in an American prison. I don't know about you. I don't want to do that. Fucking galactic criminals, gangsters from around the universe. But he was good at what he did, and he did his job as his superiors demanded, and eventually started encountering some of these aliens. And he said that his first encounters with these aliens were very exhilarating. It was very exciting to see that there was life on other planets and that it had visited here, and here it was. But, you know, after seeing a little bit of this, these atrocities, he became aware that all was not as it appeared to be, if you will. So he started to sense that there was this tension between some of the personnel, being the aliens, and himself. And once in a while, he would like walk around the corner, and it would he'd be interrupting some serious discussion between these people, and these talks would die off into a slow murmur when he would walk away. One particular part of his job was to go into various areas of the base and align the security monitors, the cameras, when technician work was needed. And so this afforded him the ability to venture out and witness things that would stagger the imagination, that would scramble your brains, unspeakable sights for a human being to see. What he discovered, so he says, was that many of the hundreds and even thousands of men and women and children were actually listed as missing or unexplained disappearances. So they're like fucking milk carton kids, right? Not being driven away in a van and you know, taken to some unspeakable activity by another human being, but rather sent to these 6th and 7th levels of hell. All he could do was to be alert and guarded with his thoughts, because he knew, or had an instinctive feeling, that the gray aliens and their telekinetic capabilities would allow them to read his mind and then, you know, the minds of those around him. And if he revealed his anger at this whole situation, it'd be all over for him. They would sear his brain. They would scramble his brains, and that would be the end of him. Now, as time went by, apparently, according to him, the late 70s, the tension within that base heightened more and more, that to the point where several security and lab technicians began to sabotage the genetic experiments, trying to, you know, in some way to be humanitarian and see if they could do something that would stop the horrific activity that was being performed on these people, and even maybe on the aliens. Paranoia started to set in. Upper echelon people were getting nervous about what was going down there, all kinds of suspicion. Then you got the fucking aliens in there reading minds. You got the reptilian aliens that are in charge of the Greys and the Gray slaves, and it's all coming to a head. There's a lot of fucking personalities in here, as you can imagine. You got genetically mutated humans. You got fucking sketchy Grays. You got like the alien in charge. You know, it was a battle. It was a political battle at this point between these reptilian aliens that were bossing around the Grays and the humans that weren't being experimented on for control of this base. And not only that, the reptilian aliens, more than the humans, were insisting on using humans in their experiments. And those who didn't survive their experiments were used for, they were extracted liquid protein from their bodies, which fed embryonic gray fetuses, because the grays were having like babies, as you are wont to do in big groups. So these fucked up grays were having babies, and the reptilians are extracting proteins from the human bodies of the people that failed the genetic experiments and feeding them to these grays to have babies. Pause for a moment. I know how this sounds. It's ridiculous, but it gets better. It gets much better. In 1979, the pressure on Thomas, psychologically, emotionally, having to witness this shit all the time, finally broke his code of silence. And he told his best friend, hand pass note, that he was working in a huge installation outside of Dulce, New Mexico. He told his friend that he was working side by side with fucking gray aliens. And so at this point, he's done that. He's broken his code of silence. He knows that a bunch of shit's going to fall on him, so he leaves his job to try and have some sort of peace of mind. But now that he knows all this shit, he's seen what no human being should ever see with their own two eyes. It was impossible for him to live a normal life. He would always be under observation, probably, and he, you know, he would have the threat until he died. He was like Henry Hill in Goodfellas. You know, he's just, every time he starts his car, he's got to wonder if it's going to blow up. God knows, kidnapped, sent down to the seventh level with the alien trash. So apparently, I don't know how this would happen, but he decided to go back to work. And this time, through one of the less guarded air shafts, unannounced, into the base by the way of secret passages, he proceeded to appear as if he was working his normal duties while taking charge of every thought as he passed the grades. You know, you really got to lock in, man. You got to have mental discipline. Apparently, you know, according to all the stories I've read about grays, you really got to have mental discipline when you're walking past those fuckers, because they will pull shit out of your mind. It's like you have to be Rey, you know, with her mental battle against Kylo Ren, where he's just fucking probing her mind and she's able to deflect it. You got to have that kind of mental constitution to be able to deflect the mind probes that a gray is sending at you when you walk by, apparently. I've never dealt with one. You know, if I did deal with one, it would likely be one of the ones that roams the earth and comes down from spaceships. And from every account, those ones are pretty decent. They're, you know, they're kind of nihilists, you know. They don't really give a shit. They're not evil. They're not good. They're just like, you know, work's got to be done. You know, they're the garden variety workers that come down to earth to do experiments. And they're, you know, they're not into like raping your mind. They just need to get their shit done and get back in the spaceship. So while Thomas is in there doing this and guarding his mind from the grays, he apparently stole photographs of the facility, and he stole copies of treaties that were signed between the aliens and Ronald Reagan himself, back when he was governor. And apparently other treaties signed with other individuals, and apparently treaties signed, I guess, by the grays too. Of course, these pictures are not online, and if you do find stuff, it's obviously bullshit, but wouldn't that be amazing if this was true? if it was even possible that this was true, to actually see a treaty signed by Ronald Reagan and then like a fucking Gray's signature on it, I can't, just even what that would look like is hilarious to me. I imagine hieroglyphics, the shit that was on the Roswell spaceship, if it was a spaceship, those kind of hieroglyphics. But he also got schematics of alien devices. He apparently got genetic formulas, you know. So he came out of there like a bandit, but not without its price, folks. Not without its price. He was made aware while he was working here that his wife and his son had been forcibly taken from their home and taken to some underground facility for quote unquote safe holding until he decided to return with their items. At that point, he knew that even if he did return everything to the commanders, that his wife and son were probably, you know, they're never going to be seen again. He knew that they were probably the subject of aggressive mind control and, you know, had been sort of reprogrammed not to remember shit or to be vegetables or God knows what else. And he knew that they would definitely become permanently missing due to some tragic accident. So he had zero options. He dissolved into a lonely life on the run. State to state, border to border, motels to motels to sofas, always looking behind him. That's a fucking existence for you, isn't it? All right, so to our next witness, Mr. Phil Schneider. Now this guy, his story is not as lavish in terms of seeing treaties that were signed and witnessing all the different things that that Tomboy witnessed. Phil Schneider says he was working as an explosive expert, helping build different secret underground bases for the U.S. government in Dulce in 1979. So years later, about like mid-90s, he told his astonishing story of his encounter with alien beings living underground. Schneider said that there was a battle, a fucking battle between aliens and humans down on the seventh level of that shithole in 1979. A horrific battle that left, count them, 60 humans dead and countless subterranean aliens fighting for their life and dead ones too. God knows how many. But he was the only person with a high enough security clearance level to be speaking out, you know, in such detail about the government knowledge of alien beings. Basically, this is how it's happened, is that his team drilled four large holes, the standard way that you would start construction, I guess. I don't know shit about this construction. But what emerged from these holes was not what they expected and certainly not part of standard procedure. What he said, and I quote here, "All the black sooty air came up when we drilled holes there." He said this in 1995. He had gone underground to make an assessment when he found himself feet away from a 7-foot-tall gray. Now, grays, as you might know, or I can tell you, very short, like 4 feet, kind of harmless looking, like kids. This fucker was 7 feet tall. Back to quoting Phil Schneider, "The stench was worse than the worst garbage can. The entity was absolutely horrible." So, in his... I can't imagine what kind of terror was bestowed upon him from seeing this, but naturally he fumbled for his pistol. Killed two of these things. But before he could go for any more, one of the aliens did some sort of motion with his hand across his own chest, and immediately a bolt of strange energy shot out and hit Phil Schneider. What he says is, "This blue beam hit me and just literally opened me up like a fish." Now, in lectures that he would do, and you can see these on YouTube, and I'll play a clip of one of them in a bit, he actually does, like, his fingers are all fucking burnt off. So he said that this beam burnt off some of his fingers, and it burned off his shoes, burned his toenails off. Thankfully, there was a Green Beret with him. Don't know where the Green Beret came from. I don't know if he was supervising the construction. Phil Schneider's never made that clear. He just has a Green Beret that was conveniently there. And the Green Beret gave his own life to save Phil Schneider's life. He got Schneider into a lift, and then he pushed the button, raised him above ground to his safety. Again, more than 60 people lost their lives that day, according to Schneider. The other two survivors, the human survivors, are living in nursing homes in Canada, and nobody is allowed to talk to them. Now, again, 60 people died in this, but he says he killed two aliens, but apparently there were many more. Like, this became somewhat of a shootout. You know, God knows how many aliens were dead. And frankly, at least from the military's perspective, who fucking cares? You got these stinky, smelly, garbage can, low-level, savage aliens banished from the universe, caught by us, stuck in this hellhole, right? Other alien worlds should be thanking us for ridding them of this garbage. But to continue with what Schneider has said, he said that there's a war going on in those low levels that's been going on since his initial encounter where he had his fingers burnt off and got opened up like a fucking fish. He said that there are over 1,000 underground bases around the world, 100 or so located in the United States. They cost billions of dollars each from the black budget, hidden from other government agencies and the public. And you know, to get, like I said, with the underground bases in the beginning, just to give a little bit of credibility, to at least have something to stand on when we're listening to this ridiculous tale. Black budgets are a real thing. It's another one of those things where if you're talking to someone, you know, on the street and you say, oh, you know, this came from the black budget, and they say, black budget, get the fuck out of here. There is a black budget. There are black budgets. How do you think they pay for Area 51? It's not on the ledger. Heath Ledger. It's black ops. It's black budget. They have it. And there's a lot of fucking money in it. But he also says that in these, you know, over 1,000 bases, almost 1,500 alien bases, or, you know, military bases that have aliens all around the world, that these battles happen all the time. Yeah, the aliens get pissed, maybe over their conditions or their treatment, or they just want to go back home. And they get into these fucking gun battles with the staff. I don't know where they get their weapons. I guess they don't need them if they can open someone up like a fish. So it's, you know, these guys fighting with guns against people that can use like force lightning and shit on them. So interesting battles down there. Gruesome, violent, and everybody loses. Because none of these aliens have escaped, according to all these reports. They just kill a bunch of guys. Some of them get killed. I guess they sign a treaty. And then, you know, maybe things are calm for a few months. Now, there are political scientists, of course, that claim that the underground missile installations built during the Cold War led to rumors and speculation, and ultimately led to this Dulce alien cave base legend. There was an article posted in the Weekly World News, which, if you're familiar with that newspaper, it's rag. You know, it shows aliens on the cover probably like every other one, or they'll show like Hitler's still alive, or Elvis is alive and being preserved by aliens, that kind of shit, right? Even they said there was no battle in Dulce, New Mexico. Now, how they would know that is probably the same as how they would know that Elvis was still alive and hovering over Iowa. They don't. But even they thought that this was so ludicrous that they were not willing to go with the story. So they debunked it in the Weekly World News, debunked the alien UFO, the alien base battle massacre that was happening in the seventh level of Dulce, New Mexico. So let's move on to the history of, you know, the aftermath of this alien massacre. And let's listen to a little bit of Phil Schneider. Let's hear him talk about this thing. Then we'll figure out what's going on today, what the lasting legacy of this story of 60 people being opened up like fish. And let's hear a little bit of Phil Schneider himself describing what he went through.
I was involved working through Los Alamos Laboratories at Dulce, New Mexico, and what's now known as the Alien-Human War. 66 Secret Service agents, government workers, geologists, and the like. I almost bit the dust. I could have been number 67. Lost their lives that day because the government lied and knew full well what was underneath. And what we'd done is, out in the desert there, we had drilled four, in a period of a couple of days, we drilled four of these holes that went down several thousand feet. And one of these holes kept bringing up dirty dust and putrefying odors and broken off machine bits and other kinds of things like that, and boring machines as well as lasers came up damaged. And of course, there was a probe that was sent down and that came up totally missing, and so people were sent down there, and I was one of the people. And when I got down there, of course, the odor was, and remember, I was in a spacesuit type environment. All I had was a small tool belt with special sensors, a small rock hammer, and a rucksack for mineral specimens and other kinds of things like that. And I had my little pistol. Being an engineer, didn't have time to carry a big hunk of pistol like most of these Green Berets carry, stuff like that, Black Berets. I carried a little Walther PPK with a 9-shot clip. As soon as I got down this hole, standing about from me to this gentleman over here in the front row, 10 or so feet away, 7 feet away, something like that, was one of these 7 foot tall stinking alien guys. And I didn't waste any time. I said, I'm not fiddling with you guys. And boom, away you go. And I was one of the rare few that had been allured that this may or may not occur. Basically was given ET training, but a lot of these other people weren't. And we were, in fact, it was asked, are there aliens in the area? And of course, the big question was no. And that was a big lie. And of course, 66 people died that day. I have a big hole in my chest. I lost a lung. My lung was literally burnt out of me. My fingers burnt off of me. My toenails burnt off of me. My skin was, I was in radiation isolation therapy for 400 plus days. My bones were vitrified or burnt. I was cooked.
Very interesting note on Phil Snyder. Dead via suicide. That's how they all go, ladies and gentlemen. Remember James Forrestal? You probably don't, but he was one of the skeptics on the official Roswell explanation. And he didn't like what the government was saying. He wanted to uncover some more information, and conveniently, he jumped out a window. So, Phil Schneider, same thing. Dead, suicide. Now, maybe he really did commit suicide. I mean, not only were his fingers really burnt off, but he also had, like, scars and stuff on his body from the alien laser beam or whatever the alien threw at him. But, you know, that certainly fuels speculation from conspiracy theorists. He did die, and the cause of death was listed as suicide. So rest in peace, my friend. I know you had a tough life, and, you know, whether or not this happened for real, still didn't have a very very easy road there. All right, so what of this base today? Is there any indication that it's actually there? No. And that is the thing, again, that makes this one of the most outlandish UFO stories you're ever going to hear, aside from all the shit you already heard about aliens attacking humans and genetic mutations and seven levels of different types of aliens and gray slaves taking protein out of people. Aside from all that, there is no evidence that there's a base here. You know, when you go to Area 51, which I have been, I didn't get to any viewpoint where you can see it because the government constantly land grabs more and more land around Area 51 to prevent people from getting in there. The best photos you will ever see are from a show called UFO Hunters, which I know it's like a tabloid UFO show. It was on History Channel for a while. But they actually did some pretty cool stuff on that show. If you take out the host of the show, Bill Burns, is a guy I've talked about before. He's one of those guys that ruins every serious UFO researcher's job by going on TV and just spouting bullshit after bullshit. And so he was on that show, and he really ruined all of its credibility. But there were other two guys that were, it was like a scientist and an explorer dude, and they had a lot of credibility, and they went in there with very skeptic minds. And a lot of times on that show, when it would end, they'd be like, yeah, dude, I'm not seeing anything. And Bill Burns would be like, but somebody who knew somebody from worked at NASA knew a soldier that said that that's a base. And it's like, all right, dude, well, whatever. Why don't you get off the show with your fucking UFO magazine hat? Anyway, I digress. Point being, even they went to Area 51 in one episode, and they used these incredibly sharp HD cameras that had optical zooms that were like unreal, and they got amazing pictures of Area 51. It's amazing. You so much detail, and you can really see the base. And we all know it's there anyway. For this New Mexico base, nothing. There's like a cell phone tower up on a hill that, you know, some people will say is direct evidence of the base being there. But no, UFO explorers have used infrared to see if there's any sort of vents in the mountain to, you know, bring in air, oxygen, so the aliens and the humans could breathe. They found nothing. There's absolutely no evidence of this thing. So, yeah, you got to take this story with a lot of salt. But it's a fun story. It's such a good story. Aliens and humans duking it out, 7 levels underground. It's, you know, it would be great science fiction. And probably is science fiction. But, you know, first witness Thomas Costello says that he saw shit go down. Obviously, Philip Schneider witnessed it and dealt with it firsthand, and now has no firsthand as a direct result of that. So, it's a legend. It is not a story like Roswell where you're going to find a bunch of credible scientists really trying to find out the information. This story, Dulce, New Mexico alien base, is usually reserved for Jesse Ventura's show, for UFO hunters, for the weirdest fucking creepy videos you'll ever see on YouTube of all this, you know, supposed footage and images that were smuggled out of it. But if you're one of those people that really believes that there is significant relationships between human beings and aliens that have come down from other worlds, this is a good one to go to. Not only for the idea of the battle, which, you know, it's pretty far-fetched, but there are also many UFO enthusiasts or, you know, so-called experts that say that there are, in fact, 3 types of aliens that visit this planet. Oh, yes, 3 times. Did you know that? 3 types of aliens. The Greys, of course, which we all know constantly visit the planet. Maybe. I certainly think, personally, if aliens have ever come to Earth, it's the fucking Grey aliens. A lot of people will say, well, that's because you got the idea from science fiction and comic books. Did I? Or did they get the idea from them? I will always ask that question. And I'm not ashamed. I will stand here and tell you that I still entertain the thought that Grey aliens have visited this Earth. Don't necessarily believe it, but I have not closed the door on that. However, the 2 other alien species are what they call the Nordics, which are like humanoid. They're tall, blonde, but they look like humans. They look a little off. But if you saw one walking down the street, you'd just think that the guy had like a genetic skin disorder. But then there's the reptilians, who are supposedly like the real fucking bad ones, right? Those were the ones that were enslaving the Greys in this New Mexico base. And then there are our little Greys. So those are the 3. I also had an experience, again, going back to my Area 51 trip, where Bobby Chastain and I went to the little town of Rachel, Nevada, that lies just beyond Area 51. And it's a tiny town. It's got like, I don't know, 100 people tops. And the woman that runs the Little Alien, which is like the little truck stop where you get alien swag and stuff, she hears all of everyone who goes to explore Area 51 or camp out and try to look at it goes there, and they sign a little book and they say that they all saw UFOs and stuff. And we talked to her about it, and this woman said to our faces, these 3 alien species. She said, we got the Nordics, we got the reptilians, and we got the Greys. And that the Greys are nice. I will always remember that vividly. That's what she told us. And that is the conventional wisdom amongst the UFO explorers who go a little further in their interpretations of alien visitations to this planet. The ones that err on the side of being a little bit more reasonable, a little closer to where I try to live, is, you know, maybe Greys. Maybe. You know, we'll keep looking. But that, my friends, is the story of the Dulce, New Mexico alien-human battle, where 60 people lost their lives, another man lost his hand, torn apart like a fish, and eventually committed suicide. Doesn't have a happy ending. The only happy ending is that perhaps it doesn't exist, and those travesties and unspeakable acts are not going on 7 levels between the surface of New Mexico in our great United States. So, hope you enjoy the story. Our next episode coming up, Rogue One. Rogue One comes out tomorrow night as of this podcast, and I will have a very special episode with Charlie Crabtree where we will, there's your name drop, Charlie. Very special episode with Charlie Crabtree where we will break down Rogue One, talk about what we liked, talk about what we didn't like. Hopefully there's more of the first than the second And then, coming up soon, maybe not the next episode, but coming up very soon, the Elton John extravaganza. 50 years, ladies and gentlemen, of Elton John and Bernie Taupin, and we will pay tribute. I will tell you stories. We will play a little music, and it will be awesome. So, I hope you go see Rogue One. I hope you enjoyed the story of the alien-human battle. And, you know, whatever you do, folks, this holiday season, be safe, and don't get torn apart like a fish. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.